The next lecture to be delivered will present the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini on bringing change through nonviolence. Delivering this talk will be Brother Nabil Awan, who is an elected local councillor for Peterborough and a renowned speaker. Please welcome him to the podium with a loud salawat.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين For the happiness of Hazrat Zahra-e Marzia, for the enlightenment of the graves of your marhumin, of the graves of the shuhada, ulama, and siddiqeen, for the safety of the followers of Ahlul Bayt around the world, and for the safety and the hastening of the reappearance of Hazrat Baqiyatullah al-A'zam arwahun al-fida, please recite aloud as salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. All praise is due to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, one who is Rahman and one who is Rahim. It's an honor to be given this opportunity to come here once again and speak at this conference in memory of this esteemed individual. My topic today, as was just announced, is the viewpoint of non-violence or change through non-violence in the eyes of Imam Khomeini. And I suspect that the topic was given to me in light of the recent incidences that occurred both in Woolwich and then the attack upon Mu'mineen on Edgware Road. By an ideology that is far right, the one that took place, or that is now the Salafist ideology that is coming, this conservative ideology that finds everything else but its own ideology incompatible to itself, and then also in addition to that, the rise of the far-right ideology through the likes of the EDL. It's an ideology, and both of them follow essentially the same thing. It's an ideology that says that either you're with us or you're against us. It's an ideology that advocates violence, that advocates discrimination, alienation of those people that disagree with their views. They believe that through alienation, through discrimination, through violence, they can bring about a positive change within society, and this concept of change is an odd beast. Because everyone has an opinion about change. Some believe that they can bring about change through violence. Some believe through the inculcation of hatred within society. Others believe through protesting and demonstrating they will bring about change. There are those that believe by advocating freedom, total freedom, they will bring about that change. And then the vast majority of us, through Facebook and Twitter, through trolling, through rumor making, we can bring about a change. And then there's a few of us that rely solely on dua. We don't need to do anything. Let's just raise our hands and pray for the coming of the Imam and change will happen. But it takes great valor and courage to bring about change in words and non-violent actions, especially when you are one man or one woman, not affiliated to any party or any movement, on the opposite side of both the political and the social spectrum. And when you take into account each and every one of these factors, it sounds nigh on impossible that a person could bring about a change with all those factors against them. But yet, throughout society, we have individuals that have brought about this change effectively. And one of those individuals is the man that you remember today, Sayyid Ruhullah al-Musavi Khomeini. And for the enlightenment of his grave, please recite aloud salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. His approach was one of non-violence. And when you look at his speeches and his letters, you find that he advocated this non-violence. When he was exiled from Iran and his publications were banned by the Shah, he was smuggling in audio tapes to be played at the Jum'ah for the people to know exactly what he was trying to advocate. He was asking the people to stop paying taxes to the government of the Shah. He was asking people to stop paying their bills to the electricity, to the gas companies. He was telling people to strike in order to hit the Shah where it hurt the most, and that was his pocket. He called upon oil workers to strike, to cut off the supply of oil to the Western powers. He called upon the teachers, the ulama, the engineers, the professionals of society to reject both houses of parliament. And then he asked the shopkeepers to not overcharge people. Something that brought together the society. He told the shopkeepers not to overcharge people. And then he advised those who had the means to support those that were striking and could no longer sustain themselves, to give them the money to sustain them in order for this revolution to continue. So that's how Imam Khomeini did it. There's many other examples. But the question lies with us. And that question is this, that how are we going to bring about positive social change within society? Because it's great having a conference every year honoring the legacy of Imam Khomeini. But up until the time I can implement those ideals of Imam Khomeini into my life and into the wider society, it means nothing. It is but a story. It is but a history lesson. So how is it that we can bring about non-violent social change? And for that, we'd need to understand the mindset of Imam Khomeini. For that, we would need to understand the inspiration for Imam Khomeini. And the inspiration, as you all know, is the stance of Sayyid al-Shuhada in Karbala. What were the driving factors that pushed Imam al-Hussein to go out and stand against the oppressor of his time? Understand those driving factors and you will understand the driving factors that moved Imam Khomeini. And if you are able to implement those driving factors within yourself, we can implement social change within society. So what were those factors? The first of those factors was that he stood against oppression. He stood against oppression. He did not stay quiet in the face of the oppressor of the time, Yazid. Instead, Sayyid al-Shuhada stood along with his companions and they took a stand. And all along the way, Sayyid al-Shuhada is trying so that it does not come to a battle. But eventually it came because they were unwilling to listen. So the first thing is that stance against oppression. Having the guts to actually do something. Having the guts to actually say, no, that is wrong. In my life, how many things do I see that are wrong? And how many times do I stay quiet? The second factor or the second thing I wish to note from the stance of Sayyid al-Shuhada that is a driving factor and can be seen in the legacy of Imam Khomeini is that this concept of equality, that everyone was equal, everyone had a role to play in order to reach the end goal. No matter who they were, if they were walking upon this path and they were fighting towards that cause, they were all treated equally. Even when the slave of Abu Zar, John, goes out to fight in Karbala and he falls from his horse, the shuhada goes to John, he takes the head of John in his lap, cleans away the blood, and places his face upon the face of John. Ulama here, they can correct me if I'm wrong, but my study of the Maqatil say that Sayyidu Shuhada only did this action twice. One was here upon the face of John, and the second time was upon the face of his own son, Ali Akbar. Equality. It didn't matter what age they were. On one side is Qasim, and on the other side is Muslim ibn Awsaja. All equality. They were all fighting towards a common goal, a common aim. Can we be equal amongst ourselves? Can we go towards a common goal, a common aim? By not differentiating between ethnicity, by not differentiating between age, by not differentiating between social ranking or economic standing, can we work towards that ideal and put aside our differences? The third factor that I wish to note is that Sayyidu Shuhada and his companions had that recognition of right and wrong. They had the recognition of haq and batil. Even if they offer me two paths, the path of death and humiliation, and surely humiliation is not the path that we walk upon. Sayyidu Shuhada, as an imam, understood that, but his companions understood that as well. Are we able to differentiate between truth and falsehood in our day-to-day lives? Are we able to know that this thing that I do at work, is it right, is it wrong? Or am I still sort of walking that gray area? Being able to differentiate between truth and falsehood and being able to stick to it. Because when a person recognizes truth and falsehood, then that enables them in order to recognize their imam. And the recognition of the imam is very important in the time that we live in. The recognition of the imam is essential. And we find throughout history that it wasn't just ibadat that enabled a person to recognize their imam. Because look at opposite Sayyidu Shuhada. Look at the Khawarij that stood against Amir al-Mu'mineen. They were there, they were noted as amongst the people as people that worshipped Allah. But they did not have the recognition of the imam. So being able to recognize the imam. And the final factor, and the most important factor, is actually having the desire for change. Having the desire to bring about change, because everything else is well and good. But up until the time I have the desire to bring about positive change, it won't happen. That desire has to be there. That pain has to be there. When I see oppression within society, when I see inequity within society, I should have that desire to change it, to make it better. If I still lead dual lives, that at work or at masjid, at home I'm Muhammad, but at work I'm Mo, I'm not going to be able to bring about that change. Look at all of those throughout history that brought about meaningful, positive change. You will find that their lives at home and their lives outside were exactly the same. They didn't live dual lives. That dual life that I live on a day-to-day basis, that outside I'm something else, but in the masjid I'm something else. But bringing about positive change requires a person to be exactly the same wherever they are. I'm not saying that in order to, you know, bring about positive change that you need to go out and start converting people en masse to Islam. No, but what I'm saying is that we should be reforming ourselves by being well-mannered individuals that are active members of the wider society and at least work towards a harmonious society. At least work towards a society that is tolerant towards Islam. Why? Because they see us as being exemplaries, as being individuals that they can look up to. But if we stay indoors, stay within the four walls of our masajid, stay living these dual lives, not asking whether I can go and pray during work or maybe going to the pub and just having an orange juice, we're not going to be able to do that. We will not then be able to preempt any issues that are coming our way, any problems, any trials, any tribulations that are coming our way. And mark my words, brothers and sisters, trouble this way comes. Wassalamu alaikum jami'an wa rahmatullah.
We are now going to have a presentation by Sayyid Taqi Jafar Razvi. He is Director of Public and International Affairs at the Islamic College.
Won't take too much of your time since it's between two speeches. Just a brief little introduction, since alhamdulillah, mashallah, there's a good crowd here. And it's important that the functions of the Islamic College are seen by you and you feeling a stakeholder in it, so much so that we can enable this Islamic College to progress further. Just like to start with a brief introduction and then go on to explaining the few courses in the short time that I have. Imam Khomeini, when Shah was patronizing you in 1963, that, you know, where's your army? You know, you're coming against me, such a big entity. The Americans are behind me. The whole world is behind me. What are you standing up for, type of thing? And Imam Khomeini said, my army is in the laps of its mothers. Or my supporters, or my children, or the future is in the laps of its mothers. That in itself is an important thing, because what Imam Khomeini was saying is, if you have a genuine and positive plan for educating your next generation, it will achieve the targets you want it to achieve. We're not striving in our Muslim communities at the moment to create an educational institute, which Brother Chandu talked about, that it would yield the future generation of our Islamically guided people who would be part and parcel of the community, yet still be standard bearers of Islam. You see, in the next few years, with the particular type of immigration policies that are developing over time, we'll find that we will not be able to import or bring in Maulanas of the future from our Indian-Pakistani communities. We have a responsibility to foresee and plan, as Brother Awan said, foresee and plan the future of our masajids, future of our Maulana circles, and future of those who are going to guide our next generation. But because we don't have a plan, we're not able to see that, both in the sense of the statistics which show that the present Maulanas that we have are very senior Maulanas. That in itself gives evidence to us that there is going to be a vacuum. And then we're unable to bring in Maulanas from abroad, which means that there'll be another greater vacuum. Yet we're not making any plans to train our next future Maulanas of our community. The Islamic College has several projects which is striving towards both the future Maulana development and also an educational syllabus which is no short from the syllabus that, for example, SOAS University offers or other universities offer. If you go onto the internet under the title in UCAS, where students register for the BA Islamic Studies courses, and you say Islamic Studies, UCAS, Islamic College comes up as one of the institutions where students can register to do a BA in Islamic Studies. Now, our courses are validated by Middlesex University, so which means that we have no problem in actually granting qualifications to our people. What do these qualifications give to students? Once they graduate, they can become journalists, they can become professionals in different local authorities, they can become advisors, Islamic advisors to a lot of local authorities who are looking for Muslim people who can advise about Islam. They can become religious studies teachers. You know, the market is open. It's not as if you're going to become an unemployable entity. And what's very important, and this is a very important point to take home with you in this presentation, as I said, the short time does not allow me to go beyond the few minutes that I have, is that we have an aspiration, we have an expectation for Maulanas to answer to every single problem of ours. But what do we do as a community? We do not encourage the best of our educated youngsters to become Maulanas or religious leaders. We say, okay, if he's a, you know, well-learned kid, he's learning fast, he's done his A-level so well, we say, okay, beta, become an accountant. Okay, become a doctor. And then when our children become doctors and accountants, then when they have a problem, ask Maulanas who have not been educated to that level, then we ourselves say, well, what are these Maulanas? They're so thick, they don't know what to explain in the present-day world. We are the cause of the weakness of our own communities. We should look for the creme de la creme to become Maulanas of the future. Those who are capable people to answer to. So in other words, if you've got a community who's got problems, surely, and if you look at the hadith, if you look at the ayat of the Quran which talks about how the Prophet was sent down, the ayat says in Surah Jumu'ah, says, we've sent a prophet from you, to you, from amongst you. Minhum is the word used. In other words, from you. In other words, an individual who knows your problems. An individual who can address your issues. So much so that if you want the future to be guided, then you have to find students from your own communities to become spiritual leaders, future Maulanas, future learned people in Islam. Islamic College offers several courses, quickly finishing. We've got BA courses, we've got master's courses, and we've got doctorate courses. In others, we've got BA in Islamic Studies, BA in Islamic Law, BA Hawza Studies, and then BA in Muslim Culture and Civilization. Then at the master's level, we've got an MA in Islamic Studies, MA in Islamic Law, and MA in Islamic Finance and Business. And then in the doctorate level, we've got something called a D-Prof and an M-Prof, which means if you're working in an Islamic, you have Islamic profession, you're a professional in an Islamic activity, you can use that professional experience of yours to try and get a doctorate through this new project that we have. All these courses are validated by Middlesex University, and if you don't have the time to come full-time to the Islamic College, you can get onto the distance learning course and learn Islam there. We've got masters in distance learning, we've got foundation courses in distance learning in Islam, Islamic studies. So really there's no excuse. You have to feel a stakeholder in this. If you don't feel a stakeholder in education of your future generation, then you might as well dump your next generation. It is your responsibility. Imam Khomeini's message was that if you train your next future generation, you can change the world. Otherwise, you become servant of the world. Let's pray that, inshallah, in this short time I've requested, and brothers have given me the chance, that you realize that you have a responsibility. Help to change the next generation. Help to support the next generation by encouraging your siblings, your sons, your daughters, because sisters can also study over there. It's a secure place where young ladies can study Islam without any difficulty. And not only that, final statement is that we've got students from both Shia and Sunni community. We are teaching people how to live in an interactive society. and we're trying to teach Islam in an interactive way, in an academic way. We have Shias and Sunnis studying together, where Sunni children who are studying with us are realizing what is the message of Islam from the Shia platform. But we're not cursing anybody, we're not insulting anybody, we have no reason, because Imam Khomeini has said, what brother said, two wings of one bird, that we're trying to prosper and future guide our future generation in that manner. I thank you for the time. I pray, inshallah, you can take the prospectors from outside. We've got some prospectors, post-graduation and undergraduate prospectors outside. Please take them, look at them. Otherwise, go on to our site, www.islamic-college.ac.uk, and get more information about it. And please realize that the Islamic College does have an opportunity. Don't think that if my son becomes a Maulana, or if my daughter or son studies Islamic studies, where are they going to get their next income? Bread and butter. Islam guarantees bread and butter if you stand up for Islam. Thank you. Salawat.
Our next speaker is our very own Sheikh Muhammad Saeed Bahmanpour, a highly qualified and versatile scholar, excelling in script writing and various works and articles on Islam and Islamic theology. He is also the head of a research department at the Islamic Center of England. Sheikh Bahmanpour will deliver his speech on the topic of Imam Khomeini, a mystic politician. Please welcome him to the loud salawat.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin. A big honor once again to speak in memory of Ayatollah Khomeini, who was a real man of God. When, of course, we talk about people of faith, we realize that faith has different degrees, different depths. And sometimes we come across certain people who we find out, we sense the depth of their faith, the depth of their iman and certainty in what they believe in. However, it doesn't happen too frequently in our lifetime to come across someone like Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. In the depth of his faith, in the yaqeen and certainty that he had, and in the dedication for the cause for which he worked, which was God and God alone. And of course, because we are creatures of God, and because he loved God, he loved us as well, as anyone who gets closer to God gets closer to the creation of God and closer to human beings. And this is something which we have experienced in all saints, prophets, imams, that they had this dual sort of relationship, attraction towards God, attraction towards people, because God cares about people, and therefore a man of God should care about people as well. Now, a mystic politician, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, we know that he was a mystic. Of course, mystic, not in the common sense that we know, as a Sufi, for example. When we talk about mysticism here, we're not talking about tasawwuf, which is common practice among certain groups of Muslims who dedicate themselves to very hard practice and long worships to get that feeling of the presence of God. Here, when I say mystic or mysticism, I don't mean those type of practices. I mean that dedication which makes a man a knower, someone who knows God. We all believe in God, of course. We have faith in God. But do we know God? Because anyone who knows God would fall in love with him. Are we in love with God? Certainly not to that extent. And that shows that we are not arif. We do not know God. If we know him certainly, because he is the source of all beauty, we love him. In that sense, Imam Khomeini was a mystic. Now, people say that mysticism and politics cannot go together. You cannot have both together, because mysticism or irfan, not tasawwuf, of course, irfan is something which deals with the esoteric aspects of human life. It deals with the inner feelings, inner relationship of a person with God, while politics is related to exoteric aspects of life. It's related to the busy relationship of human beings in this world. If you are dedicated, if you are involved in that private and personal lovely relationship with God, how can you indulge in these exoteric practices? So how can we combine these two together, politics and irfan? How can we combine them? This is one. Secondly, usually in history, what we see is that mysticism starts when politics fails. What does that mean? It means that when people are defeated severely in their social lives, in the political practice, they are defeated. Like, for example, they are defeated by other nations. Or the situation of the society brings people to a stance that they think that there is no room for improvement, there is nothing that anyone can do. Then they turn to irfan. They turn inside. From the outside, from the exoteric world, they turn inside. They say, okay, leave everything for people or for God to solve. We would like to uplift our own individual self and to grow in from inside. So mysticism starts when politics fails. So how do you want to combine the two? The third thing is that usually in mysticism, we have a relationship between teacher and students. And that relationship is full obedience, is absolute following or followership of the student towards the teacher. And this means a sort of authoritarian relationship between them, an arif, and his students, his disciples. He has to teach them, he has to make them understand, and they do not understand until and unless they absolutely submit to that teacher. And this authoritarian sort of attitude which we have in mysticism cannot come in the world of politics, which we want to have people having their ideas, their voices, their opinions. So another danger of mysticism being blended with politics is that we will end up, as in many cases in history this has happened actually, we will end up in an authoritarian dictatorship which makes the situation worse rather than making it better. Now, these are a few things that we have to consider when we are talking about mystic politician or mysticism mixed with politics. Now, we know that none of these did happen with Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. First of all, his mysticism started, his politics started where his mysticism took off. His mysticism was not the result of failure of politics. On the contrary, because he was an arif, he started to think about people. He started as a duty that he had on behalf of all the prophets of God, as a duty that he felt that he has to save people. He had the duty to bring that freedom to people, first of all in his vicinity and then to other places in the world. He started politics because of his mysticism. Not that because politics failed, he turned into mysticism. So this was one very important aspect. We know that Imam Khomeini's advice was always that do not involve yourself in social politics unless you have made yourself pure first. Because if you haven't purified yourself, if you have dirt in your heart, when you enter into the world of politics, you bring that dirt there. You see, a dirty person, wherever it goes, they bring the dirt, they take the dirt with themselves. And this is actually the problem with our politics, with our global politics today, that the politicians are not those purified people, are not those clean people who can actually run the world correctly. And that's why we have all these wars, we have all these problems. If people who are in charge of the masses are clean, are pure, then they can move towards the betterment of the society. So, this is one thing, and his advice, always you have to remember, never involve in politics unless and until you have made yourself pure. Or never go to the top and the hell unless you are purified. So, the first concern, the first worry about this mixture of politics and mysticism is not found in Imam Khomeini. The second thing was that it may create an authoritarian sort of system, because a mystic usually wants absolute obedience, absolute dedication. Amazingly, we see that although Imam Khomeini as an Arif came to the world of politics, he brought such new ideas into the world of Islam and Sharia that one wonders, is this a man of Irfan or he is a man of modern politics? The idea of religious democracy, which our respected speakers talked about before, this is a very new idea. Before Islamic Revolution, it was thought that you either have to have democracy or have to have Islam. They cannot be combined with each other. Now, the idea that if you want to dedicate to God, you have to respect people. And this is what we have in all our Islamic teachings, that you have to combine the minds of people together, add them together to get the best solution. And this new idea of Islamic democracy, which is being practiced in Iran, and inshallah improves day by day, is one of the main heritage of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. And then he made the exoteric and esoteric world to be one world. If you want to improve in your esoteric inner world, inner heart, you have to look out for people. And this is what we have in numerous our tradition, that you cannot reach anywhere in knowledge of God unless and until you are helpful to people. So you cannot reach anywhere unless you look into esoteric life. And you cannot modify, you cannot bring reform to esoteric life until and unless in your interior you have brought change. So these three aspects Imam Khomeini brought together. That's why we call him a mystic politician, a politician which we don't find the brand like him in the modern world or even in the near past history. We cannot find someone like him, really. Those who are familiar with his words, those who are familiar with his practice, know how true is what I say, that generations should pass, should come and go, until we would have someone like this man coming. Someone who is very similar to prophets. Someone whose fragrance is like what we sense from the prophets, peace be on them. And this is because he was a man of yaqeen. Now, Brother Hujjat al-Islam Jabir Chandu spoke about Ayatollah Mutahhari when he met Imam Khomeini in Paris, and he said, what I learned from him and what I really realized in this man was four amana, four things that in which he believed firmly. And this firm belief, amana bi rabbihi, amana bi sabilihi, amana bi ummatihi, this firm belief was the engine for for the whole nation to move with. We never ever can imagine Islamic revolution in Iran without Imam Khomeini. He was the sole person to bring it about. And he was the sole person to take it forward and hand it to Ayatollah Khamenei later on, and to the whole Muslim Ummah in Iran and to the whole Muslim Ummah in the world. Now, what did make this man so powerful? What did make him so influential that even when he looked at you, you felt that this is God watching me, this is God looking at me? What did make him like that? There's a hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Which says, Iman has 4 degrees. We have 4 different grades or different brands of faith. The first is Islam, what all of us have. We pray, we fast, we go to Hajj, and sometimes these do not have a very strong grip in our hearts. We just do it as a matter of course, as a duty, or out of fear. Fear of God, in the sense that we fear that we lose something or we are punished. This is the first degree. Then there's a second degree. When you find real benefits in these things, this is Iman. You have faith in them. You know that you need to talk to God. That's why you stand in prayer. You realize inside you that you need to cry before your Lord. That's why you supplicate to Him. This is different from Islam, which is just doing things habitually. So this is Iman. Then there's another degree, as Imam alayhi salam puts it, is taqwa. It's above Iman. It's very difficult to differentiate between the two, but you could realize the practice of a person of taqwa and practice of a person of Iman and faith which has not reached that degree. And then there's a fourth degree, which is not very much, not many people are favored with this degree, and that's the degree of yaqeen, certainty. You do not have faith anymore. You see what is out there. You feel the presence of God. You hear what He commands you. This is yaqeen. As the Prophet, peace be upon him, was asked, what is yaqeen? And he said, أَن تَعْبُدَ اللَّهِ كَمَا تَرَاهِ. You worship God as you see Him. This is yaqeen. As you see Him. Or, وَإِن لَمْ تَكُنْ تَرَاهِ فَإِنَّهُ يَرَاكَ. If you don't see Him, as if He is watching you. This is yaqeen, which of course, when this comes, one of the companions of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq said that I asked him, what is the tafsir of yaqeen? What is the meaning of yaqeen? We talk about certainty, we should have yaqeen, it's very good, it's a very high position, very high status. What does it mean? He said, Allah takhafa ma'allahi ahad. This is yaqeen. You do not fear anyone with God. When you have God, when you believe in God, when you have certainty in God, you do not fear anything. Now, imagine if this attitude enters into politics. What will happen? It changes the whole world. It brings that revolution that we needed in the 20th century. The revolution which changed the whole course of history, because the history was going toward absolute secularism. People were telling that religion could be completely separate from state. We don't want religion to have any say. Why do we need God? We don't need God. We are managing all our affairs ourselves. Now, it needed that Allah takhafa ma'allahi ahad. You do not fear anyone, to change this course of history and bring things back. Now, you see, everyone is talking about faith. Everyone is talking about Islam nowadays, and what terrible things are done in name of Islam, because now it's a vogue to talk about Islam, as it was a vogue one day to say, to dump Islam. Now, that yaqeen, that Imam did not fear anyone but God. Now, just imagine, whether before revolution or after revolution, a huge army, one of the strongest, most powerful armies in the Middle East, was standing on one side, and Khomeini was one man captured, deported on the other side. He did not lose faith. He did not lose hope. And when he was asked, what are you going to do? He said, wait, you will see. That faith in God. And, well, God supported him. Of course, when you support God, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِن تَنْصُرُ اللَّهَ أَنْصُرْكُمْ. If you help God, God will help you. And what happened? You saw the funeral. The hearts of the people were captured. It was captured by God and put behind Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. This is what happened, and the change came. Now, after the revolution, Russia, America, all the Western countries, you hear about the sanctions nowadays, and the very, very severe sanctions. It's absolutely, after the first day of revolution, the sanctions started, and all the threats. We have all the options on the table. We attack you, we kill you, we do this, we do that. Do you think that Imam Khomeini really feared anything? It is this strong belief, this strong faith, and of course, this would carry on as long as we have people with a strong faith in authority. If we lose that, then we say, wow, what are we going to do in front of all these sanctions, all these superpowers, all these armies, the greatest army in the world, the strongest army in the history of the world, United States of America. What are we going to do with them? Well, they are not stronger than God, isn't it? وَقَالُوا مَنْ أَشَدُّ مِنَّا قُوَّةً. God said, who's stronger than us? Who wants to destroy us? أَوَلَمْ يَرَوْا أن الله الذي خلقهم هو أشد منهم قوة. Do they not see the God who created them is stronger than them? It's very clear. However, we have to have faith in this. And inshallah, I hope that this spirit of Imam Khomeini would live in all of us. His spirit, I pray to God that Allah would instill his spirit in every single member of Muslim community so that we can continue this path and work only for the sake of God, not for the sake of worldly glory. وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلَى آلِهِ.